against it. It wasn't uncommon for local muties to have broken into other sections of the redoubts, but they lacked the weaponry to force the double doors.
352 code?
Guess so. In every redoubt they'd entered, the code to get in and out of the control section had been numerical. 352 to open it, and 253 to close it. Ryan wondered why they didn't just have a pair of buttons marked open and close. The armorer punched out the triple numerals, standing to one side, his Uzi at the ready, braced against his hip. The other five companions were ranged behind him, ready to pour full metal jacketed death into anything waiting for them. Nothing happened at all.
Dark night.
Try it again.
Could try reversing it.
If they have played tricks, as you say, it'll take a long time to go through all the combinations of three numbers. The number of possible permutations is...
It's 1,000, Doc. 2's a mite sticky. Ah, that's got it.
Behind the immensely thick walls, huge gears began their ponderous engagement, moving for the first time in all the long still years. Grudgingly, the double doors edged apart. Once the gap was wide enough, JB slipped through, eyes searching in both directions down the brightly lit corridor beyond. The rest waited, nerves stretched tightly.
Clear. It's a sealed section. Ends in a blank wall one way, no doors. Other way, it curves a little to the right. Then there's a big sector, a ceiling-to-floor job. No side entrances.
Jack led the others out. The entrance to the control section was now wide open. This was always a difficult moment, particularly as the controls weren't functioning perfectly. If they left the doors open, then there was a serious risk of other trespassers finding their way in and destroying the gateway, stranding them wherever they were. But to close them meant a similar danger. They might permanently malfunction and keep them locked out for good.
You got two bad options, then pick the least bad, had been the advice of the trader.
Without hesitation, the double doors closed tightly shut. It was a typical redoubt corridor, around 20 feet wide, with a slightly arched roof nearly 15 feet high at its crown. Strip lighting was set at the line where wall and ceiling merged. Ryan spotted the tiny set cameras dotted along the roof, their probing lenses turning in an eternal quest. No doubt they were already carrying the pictures of the first intruders for a century to some far-off security center. And nobody would be there to take notice of the invasion of the redoubt.
At least there's no problem which way to go.
The steel shutters had been carefully dropped and locked during the evacuation of the redoubt. The main control was a simple counterweighted green lever, which had to be lifted to raise the doors above their heads. It was an unusual setup. The gateway section of the redoubt seemed to be stuck out on an isolated wing of its own, with no other passages opening off the main corridor. They passed under a half dozen of the metal doors before they began to notice some changes. Doc pointed with his cane at several narrow stress fractures in the ceiling.
Seismic damage.
Everyone stopped and gazed up, seeing rippled furrows in the stressed concrete. The floor under their feet was no longer perfectly regular. There were chunks of loose grit and larger pieces of stone, some as big as a child's thumb. They also noticed that not all of the lights were functioning. About one sol strip in five was darkened.
Nukes?
I would hazard a guess that we are still too deep for any primary effects of missiles, Master Lauren. But there is no doubt that the effects of heavy nuclear activity can affect the Earth for many miles, exposing frailties in its crust and causing shockwaves to run far and deep.
Beyond the next barrier, the roof was much worse, and parts of the walls had split and fallen. The floor was corrugated in tiny waves. Now 3 and 5 of the lights were out.
Don't much care for the way this is looking, lover. I've got a feeling that there's something in this place, apart from us.
Something or somebody?
Christy shook her head, closing her eyes and trying to focus the mutey sensing powers she'd inherited from her mother.
No, weird. Not humanoid and not mutey either. Some sort of animal. No. Not really animal, just something.
They reached another of the barriers. Jack was leading, and he glanced at Ryan, hand resting on the green control lever. Ryan nodded to the albino boy, keeping his own finger on the trigger of his G-12. If Christy could feel something wrong, then it likely meant something was wrong.
Mechanism rough, sticking bad.
Jack didn't need to tell the others. They could all hear the sound from behind the crumbling walls of the passage.
When it reached about 2.5 feet in the air, the door stopped moving with a final, inexorable metallic jolt.
I can hear something moving on the far side. A faint rustling noise.
I dare say, a ghastly smell. Like old vinegar. It was most unpleasant.
Jack stooped and peeked under the rim of the jammed door.
Can't see much. Nearly all lights gone. Think there's a fork in passage ahead.
Though bright lights affected the white-haired boy's sight, he saw better in semi-darkness than any of the others.
Must be where this spur joins on the main redoubt.
Yeah, we might as well go take a look. I'm getting to feel as hungry as Jack. The living and sleeping quarters are where we'll find any eats that are still around.
Careful, there's... Just take care through that door.
I go first?
Sure, Jack. We're right behind you. Watch what you're doing.
The boy flashed a fearless grin and ducked under and out of sight, closely followed by the rest of the group. Throughout the Deathlands, there were many varieties of genetic mutations, mostly prompted by the effects of intensive radiation, combined with the use of chemical toxins. Ryan had seen some quite appalling examples of human or semi-human muties, sometimes made worse by each succeeding generation. Animals that bred much more frequently had sometimes mutated to a literally unrecognizable degree, not to mention insects, with their infinitely shorter cycle of life and reproduction. Jack was the first to find the cockroaches, or rather the cockroaches found him. The first dropped from its perch high in the tumbling wreckage of the old ceiling, landing on Jack's shoulders, its clawed feet hooking into the white spray of his hair. There was precious little light in this part of the passage, and Ryan, seeing the bug fall, was puzzled rather than worried. The thing was a coppery blue color, and almost a foot in length.
Ah! Get the fuck off!
Jack frantically beat at the creature, but it was snagged to him.
Gaia, damn it! This is what I saw! There's hundreds!
Thousands.
Millions.
Everywhere they looked, there was the metallic sheen of cockroaches, scuttling across the ceiling and down the walls, a sinuous, undulating wave of scraping, scaly legs and bodies. The insects dropped all around the companions, on top of them. Ryan felt one trying to probe beneath his collar, and he shuddered at the obscenity of the thing.
Lori! Hang on! Everyone, keep it under control!
Their leader's order held off the fear for a few vital beats of the heart. Each of them reacted differently. Doc was hopping around, crunching the cockroaches beneath his boots, flailing at others with his sword stick, muttering to himself under his breath, trying to get near enough to Lori to help her as well. Lori stood still, hunched over, hands clasped over her face, shoulders shaking in terror. JB responded to the muty insect's attack by running on the spot to prevent any of the roaches from climbing his legs. At the same time, he brushed at his hat, shoulders, and chest, sloughing off any attached insects. He was keeping amazingly calm. As the first victim, Jack had suffered the worst shock. His greatest problem was to get the voracious muty insects out of his long, fine hair. More and more cockroaches landed on him, nipping at the skin of his neck, biting at one another. From behind, it looked to Ryan as though the young boy were wearing a magical, shifting helmet of some mystic coppery material. Christy's hair had coiled in on itself at the first presentiment of danger, forming a hard scarlet knot that repelled the attempts of the cockroaches to get a grip on it. Ryan wasn't sure how much of a threat the giant muty insects presented until he felt a savage bite on the back of his hand.